the edge of a universe humming a tune. For merely dreaming we were snow. A siren sounds like the goddess who promises endless apologies of paradise. And only she can make it right. So things are different tonight. We'll go together in flight. It's now and never, or every endeavor awaits some ambulant directives to take the helm. Believe me, darling, the stars were made for falling, like melting obelisks as tall as another flying, but maybe we're dying. A cosmic confluence of pyramids, holograms. She knows you heard her staging music murder in line before the show.
Can they? This is Mona and Noah Save the World, and you're listening to 91 FM WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio.
Wow.
Sorry to give you a start, Mona.
That was
there.
A crazy, crazy song that we just listened to. It was almost 9 minutes long, and no, it was like
seven minutes.
Yeah, 7 minutes long, and it had so many like twists and turns, and I just would love to know, Noah, what are your thoughts on that song?
Good question. In my understanding of that musical journey,
yeah, that it was definitely a journey.
You're supposed to feel like there's like this meaning, and like you're supposed to like find this understanding in it, but ultimately, like, I think the artist created it to be meaningless. Like, we search for meaning in it, and there's a lot of these words that feel important,
kind of like buzzwords,
yeah, but like very well crafted and like not playing off of cliches, like building this own like mysticism, but ultimately, like, no, I don't think people really ever will or should understand what it means.
Well, because the, you know, it kind of, there's a lot of different musical styles, and, but they are, you know, they'll kind of make sense in their own way. But then the ending just comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, it just,
like, it just goes.
And then, and you hear the waves crashing,
yeah.
And you're like, you feel, whenever I listen to it, I feel simultaneously surrounded by nature and yet like very, very alone.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting because I think a lot of the like musical styles are very kind of like echoing kind of familiar styles, but like in a very unfamiliar way. Like, there was a lot of like, I don't know, things that sounded like they could be from like a Disney movie almost, but like not quite.
It's like so, some parts of it are so happy and like it just fills you with this like, oh, everything's gonna be okay. And then it starts like this cultish almost like chanting and singing.
Yeah.
Which I guess all of those emotions and much more are sort of the topic of the show, which I am classifying as existential horror.
Oof.
Not that that song necessarily is terrifying, but I think it makes us say, like, what is our place in this universe? What do we understand? What can we understand? Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, I feel like for our listeners, I feel like we need to introduce ourselves to our listeners who might not know who we are.
Good point, Mona.
Because, you know, it's not even a new semester, it's a new year.
New year.
Noah and I are now sophomores.
Ooh.
I know, crazy.
Scary.
For anyone just tuning in, Mona and Noah are two friends who met during our pre-orientation program here at Tufts. And from our first semester, we've been doing this show. It's like a talk show with music, usually with guests, with all sorts of things. And it's great to be back at WMFO. This is our first show in like months, like 4 months, because our last show was like May. Yeah, we had the whole summer away, and now look at us.
We're back.
So
better than ever.
Why wouldn't we start with existential horror?
It is so us.
It's so us.
Would like to mention to our listeners, Mona and I met doing community service, and today we met again doing community service.
Crazy.
Tufts has a Tufts Community Outreach Program, a great thing, which sends Tufts students into the community to like make daily change, be able to give some time back to the community, which does so much for us.
Yeah.
So
great
stuff
there.
A great day for sure.
It was like the first time they've done this, kind of. I mean, there was a pilot program in the spring that Noah and I, of course, both went to and then came and discussed here at our show. But this was the first official, like, outreach day.
Yeah.
The president of Tufts was there, the mayor of Medford.
Yeah.
It was crazy. It was really cool to see everyone come together like that.
I agree.
Yeah. But, you know, what does it all mean, Noah? I don't know. Existential horror.
Yeah, ultimately in...
What is existential... If I were to Google...
I like to think of
existential horror. Existential horror.
I think it'll say something about realizing that our lives in the universe are meaningless.
Yeah, you're right. It says, the dread and terror experienced by the individual upon realizing the circumstances of their existence. In horror movies, this translates to fears of isolation, uncertainty, meaninglessness, insignificance, oblivion, responsibility, and inevitability.
Yeah.
Deep.
Deep.
And I don't know, I mean, I'm sure no one knows this, but I cannot watch horror movies.
I also strongly dislike horror movies.
Strongly can't.
Just no thank you.
I get scared by non-horror movies, so I'm like, why? I can't, no. You know? That's the, I'm like, listen, if I'm going to be scared by freaking, like, I don't even know what, then I'm going to be scared by this horror movie.
Yeah. Conventional horror, not good enough. It's just like...
What do you mean not good enough?
It's just like, it doesn't get you in your core.
Oh.
It's just a very, like, superficial
okay,
thing.
I think we have opposite reasons why we don't watch horror movies. I'm scared by literally anything.
I hate being scared also.
Okay.
But for the show.
For the art.
For the art of discussion.
The art.
And the show.
You're saying
we would be doing our listeners a disservice if we only talked about horror movies.
Oh,
we need to get
yeah.
to the
just
real
horror.
Juicy existential horror.
Well, you're right. Yeah, existential horror is not just movies.
No.
I think we just feel it in our lives.
And I think probably in the modern day, like, well, in the past, the Twilight Zone tries to, like, play on these ideas, and in the present day, like,
Black Mirror,
to some capacity. Sometimes they're just, like, technology. Artificial intelligence is changing.
Yeah.
I don't think that's
what
super
about the,
existential
what, isn't,
horror-y.
Isn't the one, I don't know if this is existential horror at all, Westworld or whatever, the one where they're, like, in the Wild West, but they're robots and stuff?
Yeah, I think that calls into question, like, what if everybody else around us is a robot?
Yeah.
And, like, building this world for us. Is my life meaningful then?
Interesting.
I think
you're so right. I think that robots and artificial intelligence and technology really come in with existential horror.
For me,
so much.
The, like, easiest way to think about existential horror is, like, in a billion years or, like, a trillion years, like, no matter what, the sun will expand, and eventually the universe, because the universe is expanding, the universe will expand so much, like, humans will just, like, we will not be able to exist. At some point, the universe just, like, will stop, or it will expand, or there will be another Big Bang, but, like, there is no way in infinite years humans will still exist.
Okay, for me, I'm like, for that, I'm like, okay, when you say a billion years, I'm like, okay, for me, it's more like, it could be over in the next, like,
hundred years. But, like, no matter how far we bring society and, like, what type of things
matter.
We create, none of it can ever matter. Kind of. On this cosmic scale.
On the cosmic scale. Like.
So, like.
Yeah. But, like.
I reject that. I'm like,
yeah,
day
no,
to
I know.
Day, there's meaning. The meaning that I create for myself and the happiness I feel. That's
well, my dad
meaningful.
Made a good point when I was talking. Wow, no, I can't believe I'm the one bringing up climate change today. You know, when I was talking about this idea that, like, what if we all die in 2050, which is, like, 30 years from now, you know? There was that report that was, like, we could all die in 2050 because of climate change. And my dad was like, what would you do differently? You know? What would you do differently if it was inevitable that we would, like, wouldn't you just keep going?
I think...
You're shaking your head.
Well, yeah, because, like, there are a lot of people today who, like, should be behaving differently because of that threat.
Yeah.
Like, people should behave differently.
Yes, he was more talking about the people who are I'm not going to have
things.
Kids. No, he was talking about the people who are, like, it's useless to even try. Because he was like, of course you should try. You know what I mean? Like, the idea that, like, well, why would I bring kids into this world if they're just gonna die? And he rejects that really strongly because he says that when he was in college, people were saying that. People have always been saying, why would I want to bring kids into this world?
True.
Because there's always terrible things happening.
True.
So, you know, he wasn't, I don't think he was trying to say, like,
maybe
that we
humans
should just be passive. I think he was more saying that, like, you know, I don't know. Like,
yeah.
Why give up?
Yeah, don't give up. Things have seemed hopeless before.
Yeah.
Maybe it is, like, humans function best and or worst when we all think that we're gonna die.
Yeah, that's the other thing he says is that he's just, I mean, I don't think he really, like, supports this, and I don't think I support this, but he's like, when humans are at the brink of destruction, that's when things will change. You know,
but that,
I see your face.
Human versus human conflict. This is human versus nature.
No, but okay, true. But like he's saying that like all the technology and stuff that's taking so long, they'll just come a point where
I don't know,
it's
Mona,
like, boom.
I'm like doing research here, and like we'd love to come up with the like solar panel that fixes everything tomorrow, but like we just need to test more, and like I could be spending 24 hours in that lab every day, and like it would still just take time.
Like, yes, but like,
yes, it's,
yes,
science,
but
can't save us, I think.
Ooh, so what can save us?
Mass human organization and a strong motivation to change things like the U.S. military, which is polluting so much. I just wrote a newspaper article about it. Or like the corporations that are like fossil fuel corporations that like can change and need to change and
oh
are holding out.
The I just like,
why do they exist?
If any of our listeners are fossil fuel executives, I ask you, why? Go be an executive somewhere
else.
Call
into the show at 855-915-9666.
And tell us why you're a fossil fuel executive. Because just of all the things in the world to be.
Your life must be very stressful and miserable.
You must not be terribly happy with yourself unless you're like in a complete bubble.
You know, Mona, I went to the career fair. Just
literally, ugh, no.
There was a big line for Raytheon.
Yeah, you were telling
Raytheon,
me.
Raytheon, who makes guided missiles and planes to drop those guided missiles, very partially responsible for the 16,000 civilian deaths in Afghanistan over the last 10 years. Who knows? People need money, but hopefully not that much. It's messy. Here's a thought experiment.
Tell me.
After you die,
okay,
5 minutes after you die, the whole world explodes. Do you care?
Aren't I dead?
Yeah, you're dead.
So I can't care.
Well, like, right,
I'm dead.
Right now, thinking about the situation, do you care?
Like, would I be upset if 5 minutes after I died, if I knew that 5 minutes after I died, the whole world would explode?
Yeah.
Like, I can't see where you're going with this. Like, are you saying, would I not try to fix anything?
Well, like, no, just like, doesn't matter to you that the world goes
wouldn't
on after you are gone.
Oh, yeah. I would be upset if I knew that.
I mean, like, I don't think anybody's
would
like, I want the world to
no,
end.
No, I know, but
I
like,
die.
I think it would, like, that upsets me, the idea that, like, I would want, you know, I mean, of course I'd want to be, like, a martyr and, like, leave my legacy with my followers. But, like, even if I didn't do that, of course I would want life to go on. I'm confused. Tell me, like, what are your thoughts on this?
Well,
like, I don't, what?
I think it's just a question of, like, again, like, what makes things meaningful? Is the fact that I'm alive, like, the part that is meaningful? If I know that, like, I won't have any generation, because people are often like, oh, like, what made your life meaningful? And it's like, oh, I had kids, and,
yeah,
like, they went out into the world,
yeah,
and did these things. I think that's very valid, but I think the situation's like, okay, what if that couldn't happen?
Not to give spoilers, you haven't read my mom's new book, have you?
I mean to.
Listeners, my mother is an author, and her book is The Stationery Shop by Marjan Kamali. That's Marjan space Kamali, The Stationery Shop. But there's a theme where I don't want to give anything away, but basically, listeners, if you don't want a spoiler, you can cover your ears. But there's a character who says that another character is going to change the world. it's the boy who changed the world, and then they separate for unknown reasons, and then she sees, and then they both kind of just live quote unquote ordinary lives, you know. He says he's gonna change the world. He works for the oil industry, which is the industry he was trying to like stop.
Mm-hmm.
He just becomes like, you know, a cog in the machine. And then she, like, as an old woman, meets his kids. And there's a line where she's like, it's like character realized that he did change the world. Because here were these, like, grown up, like, competent, wonderful children. Like, I'm not doing it justice. It's more poignant in the book. But it was, like, when I read that, it was very poignant to me. Because I was like, you know, is that changing the world? For some people, yes. For some people, no. But the idea that as a teenager, he was like, I'm going to do so much revolutionary change. And then the change he made was raising like really solid, wonderful children. I just think it's interesting. You have to read this book, Noah. You would like it.
I mean, I think this is a concept that my family talks about a lot. And I grapple with, because like, it is a full-time job to raise kids, mm-hmm. which is something our society does not accept, which is definitely
crazy.
A problem. So, like, certainly, like, just how we appreciate, like, elementary school teachers so much and just teachers in general mm-hmm. so much. Like, parents are teachers, like, the, I don't know, 16 hours a day when the kids are not at school. Or I guess mm-hmm. 18 hours. I don't know. School's a long time.
Yeah, it's a long time.
So, and on the weekends, you know, like, it's a lot to be a parent. And they definitely should be recognized for, like, what they contribute. And, like, if you can't accomplish things because you, like, have kids, I think that's valid. Yeah. But also, like, I do think you can accomplish things.
Yeah.
And maybe have one or two kids.
You have
depends
to read
on the family
book.
Size.
You have to read this book, Noah. You have to read the book. Okay, Noah, when we were listening to that song...
That song.
Okay, I don't know. It reminded me of another song, and it's a really unexpected song. And this is not a song that I would say is about existential horror, but I've been kind of mulling about it in the back of my mind as we've been talking, mm-hmm. and now I'm like, maybe it's mainstream... light version existential horror, because this artist that I'm about to reveal, in my opinion, is in most people's opinion, is very mainstream,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
very like takes things and puts them up in a neat little bow.
Mm-hmm.
The artist is Taylor Swift.
Okay.
And the song is from her new album Lover.
Ooh.
And the song is Miss Americana and the Heartbreak Prince. Do you know this song, Noah?
I actually don't know if I've heard it.
We're going to listen to it. We're going to see, is it mainstream, commodified existential horror? Is it not that at all? And did it just remind me of the song for another reason? Let's find out.
You know I adore you. I'm crazier for you. I was at 16, lost in a film scene. Waving homecoming queens, marching band playing. I'm lost in the lights. American glory faded before me. Now I'm feeling hopeless. Ripped up my prom dress, running through rose thorns. I saw the scoreboard and ran for my life. No cameras catch my pageant smile. I counted days, I counted miles. Games, you win stupid prizes. It's you and me.
Always willing to listen to a Taylor Swift song. So.
Yeah. Okay. I feel like like that song is not revolutionary in any way. It's not saying anything we haven't heard before. But it is interesting to have Taylor Swift sing like so like poisedly about how sad she is about the state of the country. I don't know, it's weird. It feels kinda like an existential thing where she's like, this all kind of sucks. Like, my whole little, like, perfect American life is, like, not working out.
I feel like that's a lot of people's feelings.
Yeah.
Which, it's sort of like we've been, like, fed a lie.
Yeah.
That everything is fine and we're the best and everything's going to work out. And it's like, I don't really feel that.
I know. I think it speaks... I don't know. We were reading an article while we were listening to the song called... Taylor Swift's Miss Americana may be the greatest protest song of our time, which we both agreed was definitely an overstatement. It's a Variety article, but it does talk about how, if you think about it, like, the song is able to appeal to so many people because that sense of, like, American disillusionment is really prevalent. And to have, like, the symbol of Miss Americana, like, blonde hair, blue-eyed Taylor Swift be like, yeah, even I am like, what is going on here?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, ooh.
Yeah.
If even she is disillusioned, like,
what do us,
not? Yeah.
Like, non-Taylor Swifts have in store?
Interesting. I'm flipping through this article. If anyone can make a rallying cry out of a weird, melancholy song that makes our bullying climate sound like an apocalyptic football game, it's Swift.
Headlines are great. Headlines.
Yeah.
Just the best.
She has interesting lyrics about American glory faded before me. Now I'm feeling hopeless, ripping up my prom dress. Like, classic Taylor Swift. You know, of course Taylor Swift is ripping up her prom dress.
Mm-hmm.
But it just, I don't know, like, who's the heartbreak prince? Like, it's interesting.
Mona, you can't get caught up in that type of drama.
But who's the heartbreak prince?
Everybody. Society is the heartbreak prince.
Society is the heartbreak prince. Like, I don't know, yeah. I like the apocalyptic football game thing. Because she's singing about such classic American tropes.
But like subverting
kind of
them.
Yeah, it's kind of off. Even, you know, even though it's so, like, you know, obviously
like
well produced,
such a Taylor Swift
wrapped
song.
Up, sounds like every other Taylor Swift song.
Which, not a complaint.
Not a complaint, but, like, they all sound the same. But, like, there's something a little bit, like, I like the it's a little melancholy.
It's so weird because Reputation as an album, I think, was very different.
Yeah.
And this feels like, I feel like everybody's always like, it's old Taylor. It's like, not oldest Taylor, but it's a little old Taylor. Yeah. I don't know.
It sounds very like, the whole album to me sounds like Wildest Dreams.
Fair. Very fair.
That's how I feel. Speaking of Wildest Dreams,
the Tufts University Art Gallery is dedicated to conceiving and presenting exhibits and educational programs that explore new global perspectives on art and art discourse. All exhibitions and related programming are free, open to the public, and fully accessible. The Tufts University Art Gallery is located in the Edichman Art Center at 40 Talbot Avenue on the Somerville-Medford campus of Tufts University. For current exhibitions and hours, just search the web for Tufts University Art Gallery, or you can also call 617-627-3518. This has been a public service message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Tufts Educational Radio?
You've never... We say that almost every PSA about
Tufts. I always say Tufts Freeform Radio. I thought it was Tufts Freeform Radio.
Mona, that's the twist. That's the pun.
Well, that's my wildest dream. Okay. To go to the Tufts University Art Gallery. Actually, the Tufts University Art Gallery is pretty nice.
Ooh, this says Tufts Community Radio.
Ooh.
The PSAs are always a joy. See, this one's... The one about American alcohol consumption... Also,
interesting.
Tufts Educational Radio.
Okay, Noah, wait, I want to go back. Would you say that that song was Taylor Swift's version of existential horror? Like, in Taylor Swift world?
I don't know. I would have to listen to it again and not be casually chatting with you a little bit. I think... I'm trying to think of a song that is better.
What's, like, casual existential horror?
I don't think... Existential horror is supposed to be casual.
I know, but I think, I mean, the horror part, yeah, but I think
casual existential horror is thinking about pulling the steering wheel when you're just driving.
That happens to me all the time, not to expose myself, and I never do it, obviously, but that happens to me a lot, and I'm like, dang, I really hope I don't do that.
And I think, like, psychologists are like, it's probably good that you're doing that, and then, like, not pulling the wheel, because you're like, oh, my life is, like, actually worth living. Let me keep going.
Well, there's also, okay, my friend researched in high school, like, she's like, why do we have self-destructive thoughts where it's, like, in the middle of the test, you'll suddenly be like, what if I stood up and started yelling?
Yeah.
And apparently it's, like, an evolutionary, it's, like, related to, like, survival of the fittest and stuff, because...
People who do that get ostracized and die off.
No. It means that you're able to, like, think outside... of like norms. I don't really know. Something about it. No, it's like a good thing. It means you're like, it means your brain doesn't
isn't only conforming all the time.
It's saying, well, why shouldn't I turn the steering wheel? Like, it's like almost like a brain exercise.
Interesting.
I'm not sure if that's exactly what it was, but I remember it's something like that, where like you think kind of weird self-destructive things because your brain is like keeping itself working.
Yeah.
So that you don't get like too passive. Oh my gosh, I wanted to bring this up earlier. Noah, have you seen The Adjustment Bureau? Matt Damon and Emily Blunt. It's like a good airplane movie. I did see it on an airplane and I fully enjoyed it on the airplane.
I have not seen it. I do not
think. It is so silly. It's like very like mainstream silly, but like amazing. It's about like what if there were like agents of fate, and these agents of fate are, like, they're literally, like, dressed as FBI agents, and, like, they make sure that, like, things go according to fate, and, like, it's, like, the plan, and there's, like, a written-out plan, and they, like, have to follow it, and, like, as part of the plan, like, Matt Damon and Emily Blunt bump into each other and, like, passionately make out, and then they're, like, supposed to never see each other again, but, like, the FBI agent who's supposed to, like, keep everything according to plan, like, falls asleep. I don't know, something where they run into each other again and it like screws up the plan because they want to like be together and they like get each other's number and stuff. So then the agents of fate have to like keep them apart, and Matt Damon somehow finds out about them. You know, the classic, like they kidnap him and he's like, who are you? And they're like, we're fate, you can never see Emily Blunt again. He's like, why? And he's like, the whole movie, and like she doesn't know about them, it's just him, and he's like trying to figure out like, why are they keeping us apart, like all this stuff. And finally, like, it turns out, oh, so then they're like, I don't know, one of the agents is like, if you like, you are on track. He's a politician, and he's like, you're on track to be the next president of the United States. And she's a dancer, and he's like, and she's going to be one of the most famous contemporary dancers in the world. Like, you're both going to be amazing. But if you end up together...
None of that will happen.
If you end up together, she's going to teach dance, and you're going to be, like, a town politician. So he's like, okay, well, I don't want that. So he's like, fine. But then, like, you know, of course they end up together and stuff. And then, like, one of the, like, the nice agent who's played by Anthony Mackie, who, like, I love from, you know, I'm a Marvel fan. And Anthony Mackie's like, do you know why you would be president and she would be a dancer? Like, no, do you know why you wouldn't be the president if you ended up with her? Because she would be enough. You wouldn't feel the need to do that. Because you would be happy to just be with her. And she wouldn't feel the need to be a famous dancer. Because she would just be happy to be a dance teacher living with you.
You can always be a power couple, though.
Like, you can.
Also,
of
I
course.
Think I
and this
hate
movie
this movie.
Is so ridiculous. I love it. I mean, it's a perfect airplane movie. Like, perfect.
Fair. It does, like, sound like a good
I saw Call Me By Your Name on an airplane. Terrible choice.
Mona, I'm just about to play a song from Call Me By Your Name.
Well, I Could don't recommend
Could have been a smooth transition. Everybody should watch that movie.
Yeah, but
yes,
not
I'm talking
on an
to
airplane.
You, Mom.
Not
Don't
on an airplane.
Don't watch it on an
it
airplane.
It was so ridiculous to watch it on an airplane.
Yeah, that's terrible.
None of the scenes are about anything because it's just artistic. And I kept being like, did I miss something? Am I not hearing it correctly? Then I would go back and I'd watch the scene again.
Oh, that's
Nothing
terrible.
Nothing would happen.
Mona.
Whereas The Adjustment Bureau is like the perfect airplane movie. But I do think it's interesting, this idea that we have kind of culturally that, like, your existential horror can be, like, kind of pacified by ideas like love and family, friendship, partner.
Yeah, I think existential horror is only a problem if you can't find meaning in your life. Because I think existential horror is about a lack of meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like taking away meaning because, like, in the future everyone's gone, or like you'll die and your kids will die and your kids' kids will die and no one will remember you. And it's like, that only works if you're not in a state right now to, like, challenge that. Which, sometimes I'm definitely like, why am I spending so much time, like, doing all these classes? It's so overwhelming. Like, this class doesn't matter. But I'm learning things, and I really enjoy that. And I guess it does matter, because this is what I'm doing with my life, and I'm pretty happy with it, and I want to keep doing it, I think.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, I'm glad I got to explain the entire plot of The Adjustment Bureau. I have no regrets.
I have many regrets.
No, it was... It's just like, I mean, I know it's like also not a terribly like inventive plot, and there are other movies that address that, but I just think it's interesting. Like, the agents of fate were like, no, you have to be president. You have to be miserable so that you can be so miserable that you're willing to, like, put yourself through this, and then you'll be the president. Whereas if you're happy, you wouldn't do that. You look unimpressed.
Yeah, I think the president...
the agents of fate.
I think the president could be a happy and fulfilled person.
Course.
I don't think this president is.
That wouldn't be a good Hollywood movie.
You mentioned Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah. Let's go back.
I listened to that soundtrack over the summer at least 50 times.
It's a great soundtrack.
One of the songs that sort of sticks out to me and I think captures back in some of this, like, eerie feeling that existential horror tends to carry with it is Love My Way by the Psychedelic Furs. I think it's a song from the 80s. Yeah, 1980. So, a little electronic in a way, but, like, the electronic where it sounds electronic.
Oh.
Which, to me, is very eerie because I think, like you're saying, AI and existential horror have a big intersection. And hopefully after this song, we will discuss that.
Oh, we will. I know we will.
But for now, please enjoy Love My Way.
Door
I love the xylophone in that song in the background.
Yeah. Okay, so here's the thing, Noah. Here's the thing is that I was not listening to the lyrics and I was just chatting with you, as we often do. And when you're not listening to the lyrics, it sounds like a very uplifting, upbeat song.
You think so?
I do.
I think I really like things that are good, but something is a little wrong. And I feel like that song is good, but they're like, the frequency noise that like pitches up and then down.
Interesting.
That like is off-putting to me. I think they're working outside of the like major chord framework. They're in some like, I don't know, like D flat or something. I have no idea.
Okay.
This is my like, I'm not a music theorist. I've never taken a music theory class.
Okay.
Here's my music theory.
Okay.
Like, it's, I think it is set in such a way that is close to being very happy and right, but like, it's wrong.
Okay, to me that literally just sounded like every other indie, you know? I feel like all indie songs are like that, where it's just like upbeat but a little bit sad. You know what I mean? Isn't that like the definition of indie? No?
No?
Not the definition, but I feel
like what they all
kind of have
as
that
a
beat.
Non-indie music listener, that is what all indie music is.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Oh my gosh, there's this one song where literally when you play it and you're driving, you're like, oh my god, I'm in a teen movie. I think we should listen to it. I don't remember what it's called. We'll listen to it I'll find a way to fit it into another show.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it just has that vibe of like, this is an indie song, you know?
Yeah, that's fun.
So what are the lyrics of this song about?
Mona, don't ask me these things.
Okay.
I have no idea.
So to you, it just sounds like a little off.
I listen to music for the sound.
Yeah, me too. Well, I it depends
it
for me.
It does depend. But that song specifically, I listen to because I think aesthetically my ears really like it because it's very different and like something is weird about it.
Interesting.
Maybe that's just my like, I didn't live in the 80s, so 80s music sounds weird to
me.
That's
like fair.
Do you want to talk about AI and existential horror?
I guess. I just like hate AI.
Do not care.
I hate it so much that I don't like discussing it. I'm like, I just don't like it.
It's crazy. I feel like before, I guess climate change has always been like a big thing in our lives. But like before it was as big of a thing as it is now, it was like AI. Like I feel
Yeah.
8-year-old me was like, AI, wow. Is the singularity going to happen? Are robots going to take over?
Yeah.
Nobody cares
about that anymore. Now we're like, are we going to last long enough for robots to take us over? Hey, wait, that's such a good point.
Why don't we make the robots fight climate change instead of humans?
Like, so WALL-E?
No, WALL-E was after the climate change, change happened. We have
if
to WALL-E beat WALL-E.
If came out today, people would literally, like, lose their minds.
Good take, Mona.
Like, when WALL-E came out, it was like, oh, this is such an interesting concept. Now, if WALL-E came out, people would be like, oh my god, this is going to be us in, like, 30 years.
Not to call out names, when did WALL-E come out? Maybe, like, 2008? Yeah. One of my brothers, no call-outs, cried at the end.
Aww.
He, like, was like, I don't want this to be the world. Maybe I'm misquoting
BB.
The situation. Great brother.
Aww.
Go to college. but I think it had an impact then. About like,
so if it had an impact then, can you imagine the impact now?
Yeah, we need a WALL-E 2, but it's just WALL-E again.
We need
put Frozen 2 on the back burner. We're all excited for it. We've seen
I'm
the trailers.
I'm so excited for it.
But if Elsa
Frozen
is
2
not
could be about
a lesbian,
literally
I do
anything.
Not. I really hope they
I don't
go
know.
For it.
Frozen could actually be about like them going ice skating, and I would be like, this is art. I haven't seen the new trailer, though.
And haven't?
I heard
is there
like,
a newer trailer?
There's a newer trailer. There's the teaser trailer. That was like the really artsy one.
I do not understand how movies
And then
work.
There was like trailer one and now there's trailer
two. Oh, I think
two.
I saw trailer one.
Yeah, because there was a teaser trailer which was just like a bunch of like snowflakes.
Scenes.
And you were like, okay.
Oh.
And then there was trailer one which like was like, there will be a plot to this movie.
Wow.
But then there's a new trailer that came out like last week.
So much to be on top of.
We have to watch it. I know. So much to be on top of.
Wow.
Oh my gosh, Noah, before this ends, we can't go without talking about that video. longing for the clarity of disaster.
Why didn't you briefly summarize it for us, Mona?
Can we play it? Well, let's see. Let me see how long it is.
This song is, like, kind of long. I do not think we have time.
Oh, no. Can we, like, play, like, a segment from it?
We can try.
I don't know how to use your computer.
Just open a new tab. My computer is eternally a mess because...
Yeah, you have so many tabs open.
Yeah. That's all over the course of, like, 3 days, Mona.
Really?
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of research.
Okay.
Which is interesting, but...
It's 3 minutes. Messy. I feel like we can
okay,
go to, like, the
go
first
for
minute.
It. Go for it. Okay. There might be an ad.
Don't you have to turn it up?
Oh, yes. Is it on?
Yeah, it's ready. We're ready.
Here we go.
For a million years, we've watched the sky and huddled in fear. But somehow you still find yourself quietly rooting for the storm. As if a part of you is tired of waiting, wondering when the world will fall apart. By lot, by fate, by the will of the gods. Almost daring them to grant your wish. But really, you can wish all you want, because life is a game of chance. And each passing day is another flip of the coin. Locusism. You can't help but take this life for granted. Your eyes adjust to the color of the walls, and your ears tune out the chatter, as if your body's trying to filter out the world as you know it. And while your brain goes numb trying to shake off your complacency, your heart can't sit still, and your gut is hungry for chaos, itching to chase after storms and run headlong into the fire, to watch society break down and find out what's truly important and watch everything else fall away. The apocalypse is one of the oldest fantasies we have, but it's not about skipping to the end of the story. It's a longing for revelation. A revealing of what we already know, but cannot see. That none of this is guaranteed, and there's no such thing as ordinary life. That our civilization is just an agreement that could be revoked at any time. And beneath our rules and quarrels, we're stuck together on a wide open planet where anything can happen, leaving us no choice but to survive, to build a shelter, and find each other in the storm. And even just getting through the day should feel like the miracle it is, a cascading series of accidents that just happen to fall your way. But soon the storm will pass, and the world will go on spinning. And we'll pick up our lives just where we left them, no more urgently than before. After all, it's just life. It's not the end of the world.
Ooh, that is... Hopefully that's better. Sorry, I think we had some interference.
Yeah.
Technical difficulties. First day back.
Wasn't that just gives me such goosebumps.
It's something. I agree.
I feel like it's like the extended version of the steering wheel wanting to turn your steering.
Yeah. Just like,
oh, what if everything fell apart and I'd have to find myself?
Yeah. But like, would we find ourselves or would we just... keep living life.
Well, that's what it says. I just think it's so deep. I love that YouTube channel.
It's a lot of fun. You said you think it's called
the Dictionary of Obscure Sorrows.
Mm-hmm. They make up words.
And that don't exist for like really specific feelings.
Probably should.
Interesting. Does that lead into your final song?
My final song is very confusing, listeners. It will maybe make sense, but maybe it's not supposed to. It's from the same people who made the first song we listened to, Dream Suite in C Major. It's really weird. Just stick along. This is Mona and Noah Save the World, and you're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio, and this is The Mind Electric.
We'll see you next week.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I feel it singing all just clearer than word not either than yeah, another dream if I hold on the stars, suck it off, but they're absorbed in it.
Think of these thoughts as limitless light, exposing, closing, circuitry to fight. Think of each moment holding this breath as death, minute and decimal. Resident.